as I wait, heart of God.
Hello, Mike. Welcome to the Growth Group podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California, and we record these podcasts to help you go deeper with Sunday's teaching, both in your small group and in your individual walk with the Lord. This week, we are continuing our series about Jesus' 12 disciples, his apostles, a series that we're calling Ordinary Men, based off of a book by John MacArthur. Is that right? He focused on eight or so of the disciples, or was it six?
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, I think six of them get separate chapters, but the six that we're talking at get separate chapters.
Gotcha.
There are other people who get
honorable mentions.
And actually, we're going to finish this series with a one of our discussion,
roundtable discussions after church.
And the sermon I'm going to preach for that one will try and encapsulate not just the ones that we've used.
What does it mean to be a disciple or a sentinel of Jesus in general?
And see the lessons that we might learn from some of the other ones that are. But it's remarkable that, you know, that even the ones that we're looking at, particularly the first three we're looking at, we don't know that much about.
I know. Personally, as the one who's writing the growth group questions, I struggle sometimes. It's like, all right, we basically have one story in the gospel about this guy.
Yeah.
How can I get four questions out of this one story? But we're making it work. And there's, you know, obviously a bottomless depth to all of the Bible, and these stories included.
Yeah, and you can see, I mean, you sometimes see, you see things in what they don't say or what they don't do.
Yeah.
And I think that the person we're going to look at today is particularly one of those that...
And I think that your title captures that, doesn't it? You're calling this week's sermon?
Yeah, Significantly Insignificant.
Mm, Andrew, the Significantly Insignificant.
Right. Because, you know, it's worth noticing that he joins the three musketeers, James, John, and Peter.
Yeah,
there are a couple of occasions when Andrew is listed with them as if...
I know that's in Mark 13.
I don't know if that's the only occasion, he was Peter's big brother, as one of our questions is going to look at. So he was, but he, the fact that he was Peter's big brother. And the fact is that he was probably the first to follow Jesus, as far as we can see.
Yeah,
he seems to be entirely content to remain in the background. But
he wasn't quite as strong of an E as his younger brother was.
No.
Extrovert, that is.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. He wasn't. And seems to be perfectly content to do that, because you never see him pushing.
And I mean, maybe we're reaching a little bit with that kind of thing, to really look into the psychology of these people just by what the gospel authors decided to include about them. That could be a bit of a reach.
It could be a reach, but the gospel writers, I've always considered, and maybe I'm wrong, but I've always considered to look at the gospel writers as saying what they told us was really had to be significant. What they didn't tell us was significant in as much as they didn't tell us that. I'm not suggesting for a minute that you build a theology on silence. Well, he didn't say that, so he didn't think anything about
it.
I'm not suggesting that at all. But I am suggesting that the fact that in the case of Andrew, he was clearly, as he's Peter's brother, he was clearly part of, he was clearly, because the occasions that we do see him, there's all the evidence that he was around. And yet, the few things that he did indicate certain things about him. And I think we can not, as long as we don't extrapolate it too far, we can say, well, this may well be the implications of some of the things that aren't told that if we're not being, what we're not being told is something as opposed to nothing. We're not, Andrew wasn't, you know, as Andrew wasn't another Boanerges.
Right. He wasn't a Peter.
He wasn't a Peter, and we just didn't get told that. Those are the things that I think are...
Yeah, I mean, it seems like if we are meant to draw any conclusions about the personality, psychology, and certainly significance of any one of the disciples, it is Peter, perhaps more than anyone else.
Right.
And you know, there are elements with Thomas and things like that, but by and large, the disciples, the stories that are included about them are to tell us bigger stories, bigger lessons, bigger truths than what is true about this individual person's space-time history.
And I think we see this in Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's look at one of those incidences, probably the greatest incidence about Andrew, where we're given some information about him, and that's his call. That's when Jesus called him to be his disciple. And we see in our first question that he was called from following one person to following another. This question is called Andrew and JB. Let's figure out who that JB is. One of the more popular father-daughter dance songs at weddings these days is called I Loved Her First. John the Baptist could have sung a variant of this song, He Followed Me First. Read the account of Andrew's call to be a disciple of Jesus in John chapter 1. Who did he follow first? John served as a pointer and waymaker for Christ. Who played this role in your life? And at what point did they get out of the way and set you loose to follow Jesus for yourself?
Yeah, this is, it's, as I think we've already said, John's gospel really shows us that Andrew was the first, because it was Andrew that went and found his brother Peter. But it appeared, most of the suggestions I've heard are the fact that the two disciples that were following John, were with John the Baptist when
it's
John
explicit said, that Andrew's one of them. I'm interested, who's the second?
Most of the implications I've seen was that the other one was John.
Okay.
But I don't think we have any evidence for that.
John, the beloved disciple.
Yes. James's brother John. There's no hard evidence for that. But I've heard most commentators seem
John
to suggest
stick together.
That. Yeah. seem to suggest that. But we know it was Andrew.
Yeah.
And we know that when Andrew was conscious of who Jesus was, identified that Jesus was who he was, his is the first confession.
Right. That's what we're going to get to on our next question. Yeah.
And he, the first thing he did was he immediately left John the Baptist to go and follow Jesus.
What John said you should do. We'll read about that in chapter 3.
And John said you should do. And so John the Baptist was not sort of peeved that two of his disciples...
He had to explain that to them because they were... Some of the other disciples of his were a little distraught about that.
Right. And so it was... He immediately said, it's interesting, he said, where do you live?
Yeah, that was an interesting exchange. Kind of random.
And Jesus said, come and see.
Yeah, yeah.
And they hang out with him for the rest of the day.
Which is an interesting invitation, isn't it?
Right. But clearly John had taught him, taught his disciples that not to follow him,
right,
but to look for another.
Especially if that's how he defines his role. How John the Baptist, that's his self-definition. I am the way who prepares the way for the Lord. That if that's my job, I'm going to tell people who that Lord is.
Right, and therefore, when God calls us to make disciples, he calls us to make disciples who follow Jesus, not who follow us.
Yeah.
Where are we in our interactions with one another pointing people at Jesus?
Yeah, yeah. But do we have a mirror in front of us reflecting God's glory? Well, let's get on to our second question. Mm-hmm. How about that? It's the Messiah, is the name of this question. It's pretty easy to get the impression, reading the Gospels, that the disciples were pretty clueless. And in large part, they were. That is part of the purpose of the Gospel writers, or at least the first three Gospel writers. In the Synoptic Gospels, that is Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it is not until Peter's great confession where we see that Jesus is, in fact, the Messiah. But in the book of John, we get three clear confessions of this faith in the span of 9 verses in the first chapter. What did these disciples think the Jewish Messiah came to do, and what did they need to learn slowly? What truths have you had to learn slowly?
Yes, it's really interesting that these guys apparently instantly recognized who they were talking about.
Yeah.
And in all probability, that was because, I suspect, because of their relationship with John the Baptist.
Yeah, gotta be.
As we've already discovered, the education process of Jewish people was that they were very familiar with the law and the prophets. But clearly, it was John who said, "Look, I'm a signpost." Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. as they walked with him, they became more and more conscious of who they were looking for.
Now, the first one is Andrew's confession in verse 41. In 45, it's Philip. And 49, it's Nathaniel.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I'm sure they had heard of John the Baptist. I'm sure that his message was getting around, but...
Right, and I'm sure that they knew the scripture, but mm-hmm. I think that clearly their understanding of what the Messiah was going to do, see them that taking shape through the Gospels, was not quite what Jesus was going to do.
And there's so many reasons for that. I mean, Matthew 13 talks about the mystery nature of the kingdom, where I think he, for the first time, unfolds the necessity of there being two comings of Christ. Mm. You know, that he would come first to deal with sin, is what it says in Hebrews, and then come a second time to rule over his kingdom, right? Mm. So I feel like that distinction between the two comings of Christ and the separate work that he was to accomplish at each of those comings is not at all clear in the Old Testament.
No, it's not. So, and I think that it clearly wasn't clear to the disciples at any time even until after he rose again.
Right.
I think that what there was an overlay for them of the Messiah, their belief that he was somehow going to deal with the Romans and
they read the book of Daniel.
Right. Redeem the Jewish people.
I mean, the rock that was the Messiah was to smash the statue.
Because they were going to read that and then overlay that to their actual situation and immediately say, okay, that must be the truth.
The fourth beast in Daniel is pretty obviously Rome, but like the fact that Rome is a Babylon type character that's going to extend beyond the actual Roman Empire is, and there's so many theories that to go along
right.
with that.
Right, but they were you know, it's like we assume that God is going to do, when we see that God is going to do this, we then tend to make a logical extrapolation that says, okay, and this is how he's going to do it. Mm-hmm. Which we can't make.
Right.
We had a classic example of that as we've watched Arif's life. You know, there are numbers of different medical treatments that he's had.
Yeah.
And the easiest thing in the world is to say that God is going to heal and this is the way he's going to do it. So far, as of the time we're speaking, God has shown us all the things he's not going to do. He hasn't yet shown us what he is going to do. Mm. But
it's not as if he's not revealing his will.
Right. And the prophets revealed that the Messiah, but there were a number of things they didn't reveal about
him. And even as we learned from our series in 1 Peter, there were things that the prophets were unaware of. Like, does it say that they were longing to learn what time the fulfillment of these prophecies was to take place? That kind of thing. Well, we're marching through our podcast. Shouldn't we get on to our third question?
We should. I think
this one's called Big Bro. Andrew was Peter's big brother, and yet it's the little brother that gets all the attention. If this bothered Andrew, however, we're given no indication of this. What's the meaning of Pastor Jonathan's designation for Andrew, the significance of his insignificance? In light of this, his relationship with his younger brother, consider reading the lyrics of the song Background by Christian rapper Lecrae. Could Andrew relate? Can you?
Well, David, you're introducing me to something which I have never paid that much attention to.
And it's to your loss.
So it would appear. David has handed me the lyrics of...
Along with a mic, which Jonathan will drop when he finishes reading them.
to Lecrae's, it's called Background.
I think, yeah, that's its name.
And there are some wonderful lines in this. So it starts off, I could play the background, so won't you take the lead? Well, it seems that Andrew was quite content for his brother to take the limelight. There are all sorts of incidents when he was definitely there and he led people towards Jesus whether it was, he was the person who, rather than saying, we can't feed the 5,000, he saw the two fish and the five barley loaves.
He had a suggestion, even though he didn't believe it in himself.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he brought them to Jesus and said, well, I got these. Can you do anything with this?
Well, what's this worth?
And he was, as far as we know, he was the only one who had a suggestion.
Yeah.
One can say that he actually began to see that Jesus could do things with insignificant things. That he could, the small things were important to Jesus. So he didn't say, well, take your fish away, take your, he just said, well, we got these. He led the Greeks when Philip wanted to lead the Greeks to Jesus. He said, yes. He made that. He was there.
Sealed the deal.
Yeah, he was there. He was prepared to be. The fact that we hear so little about him, and that he was the elder brother, and he was the one who actually brought Peter. You know, you ask yourself, and I mentioned this in the sermon, that there's so many insignificant or seemingly insignificant people.
Billy Graham's Sunday school teacher.
Right. Billy Graham's Sunday school teacher, or the person who was preaching when Billy Graham came to Christ. And any number of people like that who have led the pillars of the Christian faith.
Right. People whose story we won't know until...
The guy who came into the shoe shop that D.L. Moody was working in and nailed him with the gospel. He was a reputedly a quiet, timid man who just felt God had told him to take
Timothy
to challenge D.L. Moody, and of course D.L. Moody went on to have this amazing ministry. There's, we can find dozens of them, people who've led. I mean, who led Rick Warren to Christ? Who led Andy Stanley to Christ? All of those things. I mean. They may well be people who nobody's ever heard of, but their ministry was foundational. Andrew took Peter to Jesus, and therefore...
On this rock I will build my church.
Right. And therefore, Andrew, if it hadn't been... There would be no rock if Andrew hadn't led Peter. But he seems to be quite content with that role. And so, as it says here, I don't need my name in lights. I don't need a starring role. We can all play the background. Start embracing stage fright, so let me fall back. I'm not that impressive. A trail of stardust leading to the superstar. Uh-huh. A trail of stardust leading from Andrew to Peter.
Right, right. I like that. Start embracing stage fright. Get afraid of being the one on the stage. Yeah. All right, our last question is called... Philip's crutch. We'll do this one quickly. There are very few passages in the Gospels with Andrew in them, but two such passages have him in close proximity with another one of the disciples, Philip. Read these two passages in John 6 and John 12, and consider how they depict Andrew as a confidence giver to Philip. Philip went so far, and Andrew helped him take it one step further. Have you ever needed an Andrew in your life? Is there anyone you can be an Andrew for?
We've mentioned this briefly already, and in that Andrew, that Philip was standing there with his calculator figuring out that you can't, you know, we can't feed these people, we haven't got enough money, and Andrew comes along and says, yeah, but look, we've got this guy with 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes. We don't hear Philip turning around and saying, oh, don't be so stupid, but Andrew said, well, maybe this is possible.
Right. Jesus approached Philip, and then...
Yeah, and then... These Greeks, because Andrew's a Greek name too, and Andrew, Philip is Philip, but they approached Philip, and Philip, it seems like Philip wasn't quite sure whether he should take the Gentiles to Jesus. He doesn't actually say, I don't know whether I should do this, but the fact that he goes and asks Andrew would indicate that he needed some reassurance. Andrew says, okay, come on, let's take him to Jesus. So he doesn't more, take the limelight,
more
he just involved, takes them to Jesus.
More action-oriented.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Andrew is consistently seen playing a quiet role, but demonstrating great confidence in Jesus.
Yeah, from the very beginning.
Right.
Thanks to someone who... led and prepared him for Jesus as well.
Right.
Wonderful. All right, well, next week, Nathaniel, right?
Next week, Nathaniel.
Make sure to get the spelling right. It's A-E-L, not I-E-L.
Right.
Please. All right, well, until then.
And also known as Bartholomew.
Yes, but let's stick with Nathaniel.
Bartholomew.
As I wait, heart of God, satisfied. Sustain.